Fanboy Smackdown, episode number 47, Apocalypto. Hey, this is Tony, and you are listening to the Fanboy Smackdown podcast. I just wanted to give you a little bit of an intro to this, the last of our canned old episodes that we had never released before the hiatus. This one is one of the ones that the other Tony and I did when we were still doing the Skype thing where we weren't even Skyping. We were using cell phones to speak to each other while we were each recording our own ends of the conversation. This one is Apocalypto. This one was recorded something in like June or July. We're making references to things that are long past. So forgive those references. I thought it was actually kind of more funny to leave them in there and look back on them now. The rest of the content is still just as fresh and original, and we talk about a fantastic movie, Apocalypto. We both agree that it's a fantastic movie, but we don't completely agree on every bit of it, which I think makes this episode a whole lot of fun to listen to. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Keep in mind that the references to Can't Stop the Serenity and some of the movies that are being released are very dated references, so these things happened 6 months ago. So just keep that in mind that you're not looking for any of these things now. It's old news. But hope you like it, hope you listen to it, and hope you enjoy it. If you get a chance, just completely ignore the contact information at the end, at least regarding voicemail number. The voicemail number for Fanboy Smackdown is now the same as the Tony's Losing It voicemail. It's 618-207-4747. So you can go ahead and send any voicemail that you may have there, and it will get included on the show as well. So we've got new episodes coming up next week, and there may be some slight changes in format, but never worry, we've changed the format a couple of different times, and we always seem to survive and come out even stronger than before. So hope you enjoy this episode, and you'll tune in hopefully next week. Hopefully we'll get off this bi-weekly kick and get back to a weekly schedule again. So hope you enjoy, and I'll not talk to you next week.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Tony.
How's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How's it going with you?
I've been busy, but I've been good.
Yeah, I can relate. I can relate to the busyness thing.
So we apologize to our listeners out there, the five of them that just wait and wait and wait passionately for our podcast every morning and evening.
And then the rest of them who are just like, oh, wow, what's this? I forgot. Oh, yeah, that movie thing.
Yep.
Those guys are still doing that?
Yep.
Man, I thought that website was just that Darren guy.
I want to thank Darren for keeping the website going.
Oh man, he keeps it active.
While
he
we are busy with our misadventures in life, and he keeps the website hopping and popping, and that's what we need.
Man, he is a machine,
and
it's
awesome. You know, I feel like George Lucas. You know, it's like after 19 years, we finally are releasing another episode.
That's right, episode one. Oh yeah, Darren. This week he posted two more reviews for us. He put out Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and Daywatch. A couple of sequels, actually. Gave good marks to both of them.
Really?
So, yeah. It's it was nice to see. It sounds like just from the consensus that I've heard that that the new Fantastic Four flick is probably better than the first one. Now, I for one kind of liked the first one. It was fun. It didn't take itself real seriously. It was it was very lighthearted, the way kind of the way the Fantastic Four comic book is. It's not as dark and moody.
Right.
Even in the comic book, it's not real dark and moody. And the first film wasn't either. Not to say that it didn't have some problems, but I mean, I wasn't taking it all that serious and getting all that bent out of shape about the problems. I was just really enjoying, you know, the eye candy.
Well, are you talking about Sue Storm?
Yes. Yeah.
What's her name again? It kills me. I always want to call her Jessica Biel. Yeah, Jessica Alba. Not Jessica Biel.
Yeah. You know, I think they could have made a much better choice for Sue Storm.
Dude, I got to be honest with you. If there's anything that gets me...
She wears the costume well.
If there's anything that gets me in the theater to see Fantastic Four movie, that's going to be it. I'm telling you, that was a very smart casting choice for the box office.
Yeah, yeah. She wears the costume well. I will say that.
Oh well, then maybe I'll go spend my money on it.
Hey, but yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm gonna try and take Holden to see it. He's been showing some interest in it, so we may go see it one of these weekends coming up. But the consensus is that I've heard has been that it is better than the first one. There's a lot of people that are also saying that, you know, it would have been hard to be worse. But, you know, I'm not among those. I actually enjoyed the first one, so.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And, Michael Chiklis in the role of the Thing in the first one also was just, he was great. He really, he really did a great part in playing the Ben Grimm and the Thing. But,
That guy's come a long way. I remember him as an extra on Seinfeld. And then the commish.
Yeah, and now I remember him as the commish.
Yeah, he was a friend of Jerry's. Or he wasn't a friend of Jerry's. He was like a friend of a friend or something. And they go to this party and they end up getting stuck there. And then he goes back. Jerry says, anytime you want to hang out, you're more than welcome to come to the city. Well, Jerry has to leave and he goes, oh, well, I guess you're too good for me. And Jerry's like, no, look, I really have an appointment, but I'll be back, so just hang out in the apartment. Well, when Jerry gets back, Michael Chiklis is with a stripper in his apartment.
Nice. No, I haven't seen that one, that particular episode.
Well, I don't know where Michael Chiklis got his humble beginnings, but that's as far back as I can trace his career.
Yeah, no, I watched him on the commish. Really, really, really liked him there. And I'm a big fan of The Shield.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen it. I don't have cable, but I've heard it's awesome.
Yeah, oh, it's a good one. They just wrapped their, gosh, what was it, their sixth season?
Already? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they, it's incredible. I can't remember where I saw it, but I read a rumor somewhere that, it's not being extended past the seventh season. Considering the storylines and the way that's run, it's not a terrible surprise. Vic Mackey, the character he plays in The Shield, is he's got kind of that anti-hero vibe. You know, he's a cop, but he's on the take. And he runs around on his wife, and he's not a good guy generally, and he does some pretty rotten things, but he's got kind of his own moral code,
right?
And he sticks by his own moral code for better or worse.
That's kind of the Western motif there.
Yeah, it is. And it's really interesting to see the character, how the character has changed through the past six seasons. There really has been a lot of character development, and the show is not afraid to change things up and bring in some new folks from time to time. Glenn Close was on it for a season, and she was just awesome. She was just incredible. She played the police captain in charge of the barn where the the Farmington district where they all work. Yeah, she was incredible. And then just last season they had Forrest Whitaker as internal investigations detective who was following Vic Mackey, trying to bust him for the murder of one of his old partners. And like the first episode ever of The Shield, like in the first episode, we see Vic kill that guy.
Huh.
And so, you know, everybody knows that Vic did it. But it's been, at that point, it was 5 years covering his tracks.
Forrest Whitaker would be a good guy to play IA too, because...
Oh, yeah.
He carries that...
He did a great job.
Sense of civil toughness or something like that.
Yeah, and he also was a little bit off. The character was a little bit...
He's also a little off in most of his most of his roles, too. I don't know if you've ever seen Ghost Dog. That's a great movie.
No, I haven't seen that one.
I love that movie. He's so good in that. And, of course, The Last King of Scotland, which I haven't seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either, but he apparently did an incredible job playing... Was it Idi Amin?
Yeah, that was the guy.
Yeah.
Good enough for the Academy, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we're not here to talk about television and the commish. We're going to be talking about Apocalypto.
Apocalypto.
Yeah. The movie just within like the last month came out on DVD. Probably a little more than a month now. Considering when we planned on...
Yeah, we planned on coinciding it with the DVD release. That worked out real well.
Yeah. Then, we'll do this one because it's just out on DVD. A month later, we're finally getting around to reviewing it.
But we're hoping that Mel Gibson will create some negative press for himself, so we coincide with at least something that he did.
You know, and it still might happen. He's still got a couple of days.
That's right.
It could still happen. So we'll go ahead and do the Ebert and Roper review up front. We won't spoil anything. Then we'll take a little break in a little while, and we'll come back and spoil the hell out of it. So if you haven't seen it, you can stick with us for now.
I would argue there's nothing to spoil. Seriously.
Yeah, not really. But, not really.
But, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, we can get into some of the... I think it's got some thematic things that it might be able to spoil.
Well, I would agree with that.
But one other thing: as long as this episode actually gets released this week, this weekend on Saturday night in St. Louis, there is it's in a number of places all across the country and actually all over the world. They're doing. The benefit for Joss Whedon, charity of choice is Equality Now, and the benefit they're doing is Can't Stop the Serenity. And it's a take on Can't Stop the Signal from the movie Serenity. It is a viewing of the movie Serenity, and they're playing it in, I can't remember how many markets, all over the United States and all over the world. A few of them already aired this past weekend. Most of them are taking place next weekend. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that coincides with Joss Whedon's birthday.
Cool.
So Saturday night in St. Louis, I can't remember the name of the theater, just because it's one of those really small theaters. I believe it's like the Keller Theater.
Well, the Keller is the dollar-ish theater.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, it's a smaller. I knew it was a smaller theater. Now tickets for this won't cost a dollar. They're $12.50, but you can go to. I know you can go on to the website is Can't Stop the Serenity, and you can find the St. Louis showing there, and you can order tickets through that. I'll go ahead and have a link directly to the St. Louis page. On the website, in the show notes. But I will be there, and I'll be helping out in any way they need me to. Because, you know, I got to see Serenity in the theater once, and I'm looking for the opportunity to see it in the theater again.
Awesome.
I know they've got some giveaways. I'm not sure everything they've got to give away, but I know that they're giving away, I believe it's three of the hats that, like, Jane wears in the series. That little knitted skull cap thing. And those are being donated by I believe MANPA, who is one of the hosts of Better Late Than Never podcast. She made those and donated them for different markets. So I believe she's the one that donated them for St. Louis.
Wow.
There's some giveaways, there's some raffles. Good stuff, and a bunch of other, you know, brown coats that are going to be out there enjoying the movie and donating for charity. So if you're in the St. Louis area and you're interested in seeing it, I'll be there, and hopefully I'll see you there.
Another plus, I go to the Keller a few times.
Oh, yeah?
I like the theater.
Cool.
I mean, to say it's a small theater is not really true. It's got 8 screens, which nowadays is small, but...
Right.
But it's a nice theater. I didn't want people to think, oh, it's going to be held in some rinky-dink theater. It's a nice theater.
Good. Good. Awesome. I've never been there, so I'm looking forward to
get ready to get your mind blown away.
That's right. That's right.
They should have called it Killer Theater, because that's what it does.
It's killer.
Kills your mind.
Killer.
That's right.
Oh, and speaking of mind killer, I just have to mention this. To anyone who might be listening, if you have not heard of, or if you have not heard this week's episode of Tag in the Seam, just stop listening to our podcast right now, because we're just two guys jackassing around talking about movies. Go listen to Leanne Mabry's Tag in the Seam. This week's episode, it is just incredible. It is audio art. I have no other way of describing it. It's this, you know, I mean, we jokingly have our tagline as an audio biographical cathartic experience
through film.
Through film. what she has in this week's podcast truly is an autobiographical cathartic experience.
She's stealing our material.
She is. Well, at least our concept. And she's expanding on it and making it something actually worthwhile. No, it is probably the coolest thing I've ever heard in a podcast.
Wow!
You know, I say that in all seriousness and all honesty. I've chatted with Leanne a couple of times, and she is a very creative, artistic person, and this proves that. I mean, it's something I really can't describe. You really just have to.
I'll go check it out.
To it, yeah. It's, you know, if I were forced to describe it, it would be like a podcast version of like Pink Floyd.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's just cool and funky, and we'll just get.
And it's about movies?
No. Her podcast started out as like a women's issues kind of podcast.
Oh,
but
okay.
It has become something different, and it's just basically become, you know, Leanne's life. Well, in talking to her, within the last couple of years, she lost her father. And it's very obvious that this podcast that she did this week is very much her working through some of that.
Right.
It's really, really dark and hard to listen to. It, you know, she kept putting cryptic messages on her website like, you know, get your helmets on, this one's going to blow you away. And she was absolutely right. If you're not ready for it, it's going to mess with you. It's just really dark and It's not really comfortable to listen to in some parts because it's, you can tell it's pretty personal.
Right.
But, you know, if you can appreciate the art involved in it, it's just, yeah. I'm still going
to
blow away.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, I listened to it this morning.
That's very intriguing.
It was something else. Very cool stuff.
That actually sounds like something I'd really dig. It almost sounds like the flip side of Ryoko's Boot and Buddhism, because that's a personal thing. Only it's more uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, kind of rediscovery of the self. This sounds like a mirror image of that. It's a discovery of the self process, but it sounds very... well, I guess my bottom line is I like the philosophical, and I think that sounds very interesting to me.
Right, right.
But maybe I don't even know what I'm talking about. Because you're like, right, yeah.
Sure, whatever.
Well,
have another beer.
All right, then I will.
Yeah, but I would definitely suggest checking this out. Keeping in mind that this is not the tone of every one of her episodes. I know about two or three episodes ago, she had an episode on women who are mother fakers.
Nice.
And it's basically every... I mean, she had this long essay, basically, of how women are mother fakers. Huh. And it's, you know, how they wear makeup to change their appearance and in a form that's faking who they are and the things that they do to themselves to present themselves to, you know, they say it's to present themselves to men, but it's really about what other women think about them. It's a really good, funny, very lighthearted piece. And then you have something like this that's very much the polar opposite of that. But she knows what she's doing, and it's definitely worth checking out. And you know, in the anagram of her podcast, I mean, spell it out: tag in the seam.
Tag in the seam. Tag in the seam.
Yeah. Not, I guess that's not an anagram. That's not an anagram. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about anymore. It's late.
That's okay, man. It is late. And at this hour, I don't even think I can tell you what an anagram is, although
anyway,
I think I know what it is.
No. An anagram is not what I'm thinking of. And I'm completely off.
What is it?
I think the genie needs to save my ass at this point.
Genie, where are you?
We need you.
We'll edit
help
you
us,
in later.
Genie. You're our only hope. Basically, you take the first letter of each word of tag in the seam.
Okay.
Tits.
Tag in the seam. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's not an anagram. That's like a... I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I know.
It's too late.
Boy, we're really useful tonight. Okay. And, you know, the strongest thing I've had to drink all night is Diet Pepsi.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's unfortunate.
You need to have a little more of that there Pepsi.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so let's get on to the topic at hand before everybody just turns this off for good. Apocalypto. This was another one of Mel Gibson's movies where nobody spoke any English.
Right.
And, you know, when I first heard about the movie, my first thought was, you know, great. I still haven't seen Passion because I'm, you know, I know the basics of the story, and I know that it's supposed to be a very different experience in seeing that movie. But I have to be kind of in the mood to read my movies.
Right.
I enjoy the experience of movies, but at the same time, reading a movie isn't normally the top on my list of things to do. That being said, I have seen the full Russian version of Solaris, which is
all right,
4 hours long, and that's all reading.
That's like eight foreign movies in one.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. And you know, they Clooney and Soderbergh remade that, and I don't think they really lost any of the dialogue when they remade it down to like a 2-2.5 hour flick. It's because the cinematography in that movie was these long, slow, sweeping shots, and Soderbergh cut most of that out.
Right.
It was just a different cinematic style for the time. So you really didn't lose any of the story. It was just that, you know, if you're not doing a 5-minute long pan, you know, you're able to cut about 4 minutes and 50 seconds. So I've had that experience. You know, I've seen Letters from Iwo Jima. I've seen a number of foreign films. Hearing that he was making another one that was not only going to be a foreign film, but, you know, in a foreign language, but in another dead language.
Right.
You know,
his aren't really foreign films. His are films
about... No, it's really not. It's really not.
You know, cultures that no longer exist.
Exactly.
You know, which is cool.
It's cool. It was just when I first heard about it, I was like, you know, what about this is going to appeal to me?
That stuff does appeal to me, though. I don't know. I think the authenticity of how the movie feels is a big draw for me. And that feels completely authentic. When you're watching, you know, you're like, well, I don't even know what the hell he's saying. But I know it's right. The year 3 AD, and I wouldn't understand it.
Yeah.
You know?
Now with Apocalypto, though, I think what sold me on the movie was about the first 10 minutes.
Okay.
When nothing really happened to advance the plot.
Right.
It was all introduction of these people.
Right.
And their lifestyle. And it was a bunch of guys out in the forest hunting, you know. Basically, it was a bunch of guys at work because, I mean, they had to hunt for their food. So they're out in the forest hunting, and they're, you know, they're busting each other's balls. They're making cracks about the, you know, that the one guy can't get his wife pregnant. And
right.
I mean, it was like, oh, wait a minute. These are just guys.
Yep.
I mean, it was this, you know. It didn't turn them into anything pretentious or, you know, somehow, you know, any different than just some guys who are at work and cutting up and teasing each other and
high-fiving each other.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding. It didn't happen, but
yeah, not cool, not specifically, but it was, yeah, if they high-fived and, you know, did one of those around the back sweeping, fives with the punch it in,
right?
That would have been awesome. but it was just how it showed that these are just people. You know, there was nothing any more special about them than anyone else. You know, it made them very relatable,
right?
Which is important for the progression of the film,
right? What follows?
Yes. And you know, I think to give this movie a review, personally, I thought it was an excellent film. I thought it was very well shot. I thought the locations were great. The acting was incredible. Jaguar Paw, the protagonist of the film, that is. If I'm remembering that name right, I believe it was Jaguar Paul.
I think you're right.
He's the man.
Yeah, I mean...
He's awesome. It would be some... You have to be a little bit selective on who I would recommend this film to, though, at the same time.
Well,
because
I think...
It's a little bloody.
Yeah, it is... Easily the bloodiest film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, flat out, it's the goriest, bloodiest film ever. It makes Schindler's List look like, you know, Curious George goes to school. I mean,
right.
It's just, it's unbelievable. And I would agree with you, it is an excellent film. I personally did not like it.
Really?
Yeah, it's not that it wasn't entertaining. In fact, I think I almost suffered a coronary during the the film viewing, and it was very good. It was very well done. I think there was something I expected from the film that wasn't there, and that was The Passion and Braveheart are very violent films.
Yes.
But that violence is built around a larger core idea, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, why they fight or why someone's being crucified. But this film was nonstop. It was like watching a crucifixion for 2 hours with no purpose. Just no purpose behind it at all.
Really?
I thought so. And I'm not saying he didn't have a purpose in making the film. I believe that there are many reasons he made it, and I believe he achieved those reasons. But I don't think the story has a significant moral center to it that much. And I could be wrong about that. But I didn't see it.
Hmm. So I'm guessing you are not recommending this film.
No, I'm not saying that, because I would recommend it to any person interested in history, as I am. Any person who's interested in history should see the film, because it's very accurate. I believe one of his goals was to recreate the society and the culture and everything on film. And he does that, and he does it extremely well. And I also think that as a thriller, it's incredibly entertaining. And that anybody who enjoys thrillers, gory thrillers, moreover, will enjoy the movie. So I would recommend it to those two camps.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't take anyone in my family to see it. You know, ever. but like I said, you know, I think that there's a lot of merit to the film. I respect the film. I'm not saying it's bad. I don't really ever want to see it again. There are things in it that I would prefer never to see again. I wish it weren't in my head. But that's how I feel about that.
Sure.
So. But anyway, no, it's a good film. I'm not going to say it's not a good film.
All right.
If you see The Passion, or which you haven't seen.
Right.
Or Braveheart, which I'm sure you have seen.
Oh, yeah.
A
number of times.
There's a great deal of philosophy hanging in the balance in those films. And in this film, I understand that there is a philosophy behind it. In the beginning of the film, it says the society which falls from the outside has already crumbled from within. And you can kind of guess where that's going to go.
Well, sure.
But I think the interesting thing about the film was it didn't really discuss the merits of that argument at all. Unlike Mel Gibson's other films, which are deeply philosophical, this seemed more like a nonstop roller coaster, which was fine because it was very good in that sense. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really address any of those points, and I found myself having a difficulty connecting his framing of the film in the beginning with the rest of the movie. So that would be my core criticism of it.
All right.
But you sound shocked.
I am. just because it's been a while since we've had very differing opinions about a movie. I think to go any further, I'm going to need to go spoilery. So let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we will go ahead and dig in a little more to the meat of it and see if we can figure out where our differences of opinion lie. And maybe if you haven't seen the film, or if you have, you can join in the argument, because it sounds like it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
Peace.
Hi, my name is Tony, and I'm the host of the Fanboy Smackdown Movie Podcast and Tony's Losing It, my personal journey through weight loss. My friends at the Fear the Boot Podcast are hosting Fear the Con, a gaming convention, on March 8th in the St. Louis metro area. Now, we all know the notorious reputation of the dietary habits of gamers, and I want to give them all an opportunity to have a healthy snack while they're running from Cthulhu, slaying dragons, or bashing each other with mechs. I have a plan. It's called Fear the Fruit. I'm going to be at the con handing out healthy snacks to the folks playing games and having a good time.
And yes, you'll be fighting off scurvy as well. Ta.
That's right, Rafe. If you want to join me in this drive to curb someone away from a bag of chips and towards some fresh, healthy snacks, then please stop by tonyslosingit.com and click on the donate button. All donations taken at the site between now and March 8th will be used to purchase fresh fruit that will be handed out at the convention. For more information about the con, please visit warhorn.net/fearthecon or visit feartheboot.com and listen to bonus episode 19. Thanks, and remember, an orange a day keeps the scurvy away. And we're back.
We are back.
And if you haven't left yet and you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, we'll see you next time.
Yeah, it's been fun.
And if you don't plan on seeing it, or if you're if you're just interested in hearing what we have to say, because apparently we have some differing opinions, stick around. So let's see. As far as what I enjoyed about the movie, I enjoyed the realistic how they showed the realistic societies, and mm-hmm. basically we caught a glimpse of two different societies. We had the tribe, Jaguar Paws tribe, who were they were just kind of living out there on their own, doing their own thing, hunting, gathering, and living in their own little isolated group.
Right.
And then you had the larger culture, which is we only see that after the group comes in, captures the men, and basically it captured the men and killed the women and children.
Yeah.
If it didn't capture them for slavery.
Right.
And you know, I didn't really have a problem with the presentation of the societies, because that's pretty much how they were. For me, where the movie really started was there's a sequence where the men are about to be sacrificed, and
right.
The way it went down was basically the men get captured, the warriors are going to be sacrificed to their gods, and the women are being sold into slavery.
Right.
Jaguar Paw, during the initial conflict, is able to stash away his very pregnant wife and child, and they are in a pit. I didn't quite get the purpose of the pit, but they're basically in this pit.
I think it's just there for plot purposes.
Yeah, yeah. So they're in this pit, and they are being held away from the conflict. So they weren't captured. From that point forward, his mission is to get back to them.
Right.
There's a sequence where they're showing the men being marched back to the rest of the society. And, you know, I at first I got the impression that they were going to be used as, like, slave labor. As they showed the pyramids being built. But, you know, that was apparently never really the purpose. They were basically going to be used as sacrifices to the gods.
Right.
Then an eclipse takes place. And it's just as Jaguar Paul is about to be sacrificed. Now, the sacrifice scenes were very disturbing. They were tough to watch.
Yeah.
I believe
it's totally true, but there are things wow.
They were. I will grant you that they were very rough to watch. Very, very bloody. I can't say that it's the most violent thing I've seen, because I've seen a number of war movies that are pretty brutal, and and this may be the difference. Did you see it in the theater?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm not sure if some of this is the difference between seeing it in a theater and seeing it at home, but there were some sequences that I imagine would have been a whole lot more stark on a huge screen than they were on a television.
Small screen. I think the difference in the violence is primarily the sadism behind the violence. In war movies, people lose their arms and legs and their heads.
But sure.
It's not particularly sadistic.
Right.
This film is all about sadism.
They're removing people's heads and pitching them downstairs.
Yeah, and then they're baptizing their children in the blood of those people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Christianity too was a blood cult in the early centuries. But it was animal blood. It wasn't, you know,
right.
It wasn't human blood.
Right.
And that just made it very hard for me to watch. Again, probably all true, but my gosh, it was pretty disturbing.
And that was horrible, and that was really bad. I mean, that was. For me, that was showing me basically why that society needed to collapse.
Right.
That was framing, okay, this is the society that is so far gone that they're resorting to human sacrifices to get their way.
But we don't watch the society collapse.
We don't watch the society collapse, you're right. But we do, on a smaller scale, see how Jaguar Paw stands up to the men who end up chasing him.
Right.
When he's, because basically what happens is the men are allowed to be quote unquote set free.
Right.
Which, you know, they're set free in one of the most sadistic ways possible. They're basically being sent running in a killing field, and while the soldiers are using them as target practice as they're running away. Jaguar Paw gets injured but does manage to escape and ends up killing one of the guards in the process. Therefore, they come after him. I think it was about 8 or 9 guys end up tracking him through the forest.
Yeah.
And
one by one, like a badass, he picks them all off. It's so awesome.
One by one, like Rambo.
Yeah.
From the moment that he escapes into the wilderness, that movie became First Blood.
Yeah.
I can't describe it any other way. That movie became First Blood. In you know, John Rambo kicking ass in the backwoods. I mean, it was that. It was absolutely that. I liked First Blood, you know?
Oh, yeah, and I don't want to say that it wasn't good to see him fight back.
Yes.
But I guess my expectations were different. I did not expect to watch one man run from nine guys in the woods for 90 minutes, because that's not how the movie was framed.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get it.
And see, for me, my expectation of the movie, from what I saw in the first half an hour, 45 minutes, was that I just wanted to see him get back to his wife.
Right.
That was... For me, if there wasn't a resolution to that, the movie would have failed for me.
Right. Because, and I guess you're right in that.
And I think, you know, and I think that in an interesting way, as a father, I can really relate, you know, to what he's doing. I mean, he's got a child, he's got a pregnant wife, he's trying to get back to, he's making that struggle, and I can relate to that in, you know, in that position. Sure. Where, you know, yeah, if I were, you know, being
chased by nine guys in an ancient Mayan society,
right?
Which, here's another thing I don't understand about, and I don't want to send this conversation in a different direction from what we're talking about.
Right.
Well, they say Mayan in the every preview and every print promotion for it talk about the, yes, Mayan society. Based on what I saw and what happened at the end,
mm-hmm,
I would have to assume that was the Aztec, not the Mayan society.
See, that's... And that's why I've been purposefully avoiding saying Mayans and Aztecs, because I didn't remember enough of my 8th grade history, or I guess that was probably 7th grade now that I think about it, history of the South American cultures, to remember specifically which ones were the pyramid builders and which ones were the blood sacrificers, and, you know.
I think the Mayans had a portion of that. They were much earlier, and they were not famous as the Aztecs were for the blood rituals, which,
right,
was one of the core scenes in the movie. And on top of that, Montezuma... Here's this thing. This just kills me. Montezuma thought that Francisco Pizarro was a friend. No, it was Hernan Cortez. Thought that Hernan Cortez was a god.
Uh-huh.
Because... the god would appear as a white man, essentially.
Yeah.
Hernan Cortez was white. So Montezuma was very benevolent to Hernan Cortez, and Cortez came in and wiped them all out.
Right.
Now, so the Christians, or the ships, you know, which we assume to be, I suppose, Spanish.
Right.
Big cross on them. That would have to be the Aztecs, you know. I mean, I don't understand what all the talk about the Mayan society was.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, and I can't speak to that, and I'm sure somebody knows a whole lot better than I do.
Unless they decided that, unless the new history on it, and I haven't studied the subject obviously in like 20 years, but unless the,
right,
the history on it is, well, during this Mesoamerican period, you know, the Mayan and Aztec cultures were essentially threaded. They're the same culture.
That could be.
But it just seemed, I don't know, it kind of caught me off guard.
Unless maybe jaguar paws people were the last holdbacks from the Mayans, and yeah, I'm not real sure.
And the Aztecs were conquering the Mayans at that time? The Aztecs,
perhaps,
would have already have wiped out the Mayans or inbred their culture into the Mayans, I believe, by the time Cortez's people arrived. I don't know.
Right.
But it was something at the end bothered me. I did not expect to see the Europeans at the end of the movie.
That was a surprise.
Because
that was a surprise. And
they said Mayans.
You know, if the one slight disappointment I had in it was that we saw the Europeans, and basically at that point you had to assume and let your history take over instead of letting the story get told.
Right.
The movie didn't tell that story. It showed that the change had come. And, right. You know, it was a very dramatic moment and a very convenient plot device because at the time it looked like, you know, Jaguar Paw was dead. I mean, he was going to be killed.
Right.
And he was out on that beach and looked up and he stopped and the other guys stopped and everybody's looking out at sea and then we see the boats coming in.
But again, and maybe I put way too much stock in the initial phrase, but that's not a society crumbling from within. I mean, yeah. It's not.
Well, and see, for me, I didn't really take that as what the movie was about, and maybe it was because I had some foreknowledge of the movie. I didn't have a lot of foreknowledge. I knew just from hearsay that the movie was about a guy running for a long time. And at first okay. I was like, why is this interesting? So I knew it was supposed to get to that point. And now once it got to that point, I was fully invested in the film and I was cheering for him.
Oh yeah.
Every time he took out one of those other guys, I was like right there. You know.
You I just want to make sure you understand that I wasn't disinterested in it.
No. I understand that because I can see what your disappointment in the film was. Because looking back at it, and seeing how the movie was framed at the beginning, it did seem to be, especially with how many people were introduced into the film.
Yeah.
It seemed to be taking on kind of an epic scope.
Yeah.
Like it was going to be something a lot more grandiose and a lot broader, more sweeping story than one guy Ramboing it in the wilderness. Which is, you know, what it ended up being.
Right.
And if that is what you were expecting out of the film after the first 45 minutes, which I can see how you could be expecting that, I can see where the rest of it would have been a letdown.
Yeah.
But
I was happy every time he stuck it to one of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody was like, yeah! Because he goes through so much. I mean, oh my God, amount of torture he goes through is just, it's unbelievable.
You know what? And I don't like putting an explicit tag on these unless we have to, but I'm going to go ahead and put it on for this one line because it just made me laugh out loud. And it was the scene, it was right after the guy gets nailed by the snake. And they're trying to it's one of the bad guys, and they're all standing around trying to figure out if there's anything we can do, if there's anything they can do to save him. And the one guy just looks at him and says something, and you know everything's subtitled, and it just says, "He's fucked." I just busted out laughing. I thought a typical
Mayan phrase of the time.
Yeah,
you know,
it was just he's screwed. It's over. And, you know, it was definitely a loose translation, but it kind of went to show you that even those people were still people, and they, you know, even those guys had doubts that what they were doing was the right thing to do.
Right, they were being led by a man who was, I guess, the king of his pond, so to speak.
Yeah.
He was a sub. He was obviously a warrior class slave trader, I reckon.
Right.
That's what he was. And he was the king of his, you know, little turf. You know?
Right. And he got you know, Jaguar Paw spit in his eye.
Right.
And he got his panties in a bunch and felt the need to go after him. Everything else be damned.
Right. And I think that story in and of itself was a good story. I think the part about the family, you know, that society really starts with the family, and that he needed to get back to his family. I think that was a very good plot. It just seemed like it was in the wrong movie. To me, and maybe I latched on, like you said, too much to the beginning at that point.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I didn't really latch on to that, but I think it was. For me, I knew that it was going to be something different. So when his wife and child were stashed away, I knew that that was playing a whole lot bigger role in this, and that the farther he got away from them, and that they bothered to keep coming back to them, I guess for me, kind of grounded the story there instead of in the Mayan Aztec blood ritual, you know, Roman orgy world that they ended up going to. For me, I think it was just a matter of what I latched onto at the beginning.
Right.
And I think what this could go to is, if you haven't seen the film and if what we've talked about interests you at all, at this point, is to understand that, you know, if you don't take some of the things that are presented to you, and I think you're right. I think some of the things that are presented are probably misrepresented in the way they're shown. I forgot about the saying that was in front of it, where it said that about the society collapsing from within. And now that you say that, yeah, I mean, why would you say that? That really doesn't have a whole lot of payoff in this film, except for the fact that you know that it's a bad place.
But the thing about it is, throwing that quote up there, and then after everything you see in the first 45 minutes, you want to see that society collapse.
Right.
And when you don't see that, you know, I couldn't take enough away from that they're going to start again, his family, as good as that was. And as happy I was that he made it through and he got his family back.
Right.
That was not... that storyline in no way justified to me everything that I had to see for the first 45 minutes. I did not understand why we were shown that in the first 45 minutes. It seemed like, unless it was just Mel Gibson wanted to make a pseudo-documentary on Aztec culture, which is fine, but that's not the way it was.
See, I almost would have... I think what could have helped the movie more, because I think there was something missing from it. It would have been to extend the sequence beyond just seeing the boats.
Yeah.
You know, to see what happened after that.
Yeah.
I mean, they make this grand allusion to that, you know, things are changing now. Everything's different now. But there's really no payoff to that. And I think, I understand what you're saying. And I think to have more follow-up to the coming of the Europeaners to this society, and to see what would have happened beyond that, would have been a nice bit of payoff to see, you know.
Or even a show.
Them coming in with their muskets and knocking them down, you know.
To show in some ways maybe their weaknesses, maybe the holes in the society.
That's what, for me, that's where I got, that's what I got out of Jaguar Paw being able to fend off all those guys.
Okay.
Was that these guys are supposed to be warriors, you know, and they're supposed to be warriors hunting him down, and all he is a hunter.
And there are things also in conjunction with that, like they walk through a sick village, and the kid says something ominous, and, you know, obviously they're inward looking as a culture at that point.
Right.
And you're seeing that, but it didn't seem demonstrated to me as a weakness. It seemed to me to be outwit, outlast, which I'm glad the hunter did, but it just seemed to me to not capture the elements of the story presented in the beginning of the film.
All right.
So, but anyway.
I
don't want to beat a horse to death or whatever.
No, we can do that. We've done it before.
Oh, yeah.
I think there you have it. We've got some differing opinions on this film. If you've seen Apocalypto, or if you do see it at some point after this, let us know what you think. Is one of us right? Is one of us wrong? Are we both, smoking crack and we don't know what the hell we're talking about?
And I think the best film, the things that mark the best films are the controversy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that you and I disagree on it, but both admit it's really, really, really good, means that it is. It's really good. And if it's controversial and makes you uncomfortable, it should be seen by the people that can handle it.
It's definitely a rough film to watch. I won't go as far as saying I'll never see this film again. In fact, I wouldn't mind owning it. I don't know that there are certain sequences that I necessarily need to watch in it again.
Right.
But I can definitely see that if this movie's on HBO and I turn it on and it's just after he's escaping into the wilderness, I'm watching the rest of it.
Right.
Well, I'll sit there and watch I'll watch that last 45 minutes over and over and over again, where that's the most thrilling chase scenes I've seen in a long time.
Oh yeah. Very thrilling.
It's a great thriller at that point.
It is, above all things, I think, a thriller.
Yes.
And not having expected a thriller, but I think it is one of the most intense thrillers I've ever seen. At least most intense in many, many years.
Right.
I think the last film to be that nonstop and intense, although a little bit lighter fare, was Raiders of the Lost Ark, is still, nonstop. And that's what this is like,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, if you're not one for violence and bloodshed, definitely stay away from this. Absolutely, yeah. Stay away from this. If you can't handle bloodshed, this is absolutely not the movie for you. It is violent. There's no way around that. That's the regardless of everything else, we will absolutely agree that this is a very violent movie.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and call this quits. And hey, if you want to send us an email, you can email us at fanboysmackdown@gmail.com. We have comments. Post some comments directly on the link. We are still at the Farpoint Forums at farpointforums.com. Or you can send us a voicemail at 206-339-FBSD. And haven't used that in a while, so probably have to call it and make sure that we haven't lost the number.
Yeah, true that.
Because if you go without for a month, they'll whack you. So maybe
somebody else
to,
give us let us know about Apocalypto, yeah, so we can test our number at least.
Exactly. We'll see you next time. And if I've had the chance to see Pirates 3, we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, if not, and
probably
we'll,
all the Pirates movies.
Talk about something else.
Yeah, we'll figure something else out. No problem about that.
Been a pleasure, as always, man. I'm glad we got to do this again.
No kidding.
Hopefully
all right, we'll
get
see you
to
next
do
time.
It more.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, see ya.
All right, see ya.